Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome to Season 5, Episode number 8 of Cinematica. My name is Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio, we have...
Saigai.
Nice! And Kaylee.
As opposed to Saigon, which is what we often have.
Saigon. Yeah.
Look, it's the A-Team. Always a pleasure to be here with you. In today's episode, Vince Vaughn remakes the Canadian hit Starbuck as delivery man. The late James Gandolfini stars with Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Enough Said. And the backing singers get to the front of the stage in 20 Feet from Stardom. What's that in metric? Because actually, 20, you know, it really should be for every, for all the rest. Yeah, what's that in meters?
I don't know.
It's about 11, 12 meters.
I think we're doing a. 11 showing, showing ourselves up here, Dan.
So, 11 meters from Stardom. We'll be talking about that a little bit
11
later.
11 meters from Stardom, yeah. That's right, I like it.
But first, time to look at what is in the mailbag. And I know there's been some quite interesting discussions backwards and forwards in the social media arena.
Yes. So, flicks over the weekend have had some, and during the week, I went to one last night, they had some preview screenings for Ender's Game, the sci-fi young adult novel. And, of course, in it there is a Maori character played by Ben Kingsley, and that was what most of the discussion was about today.
Yeah, not too much discussion of
the actual film.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
No.
Except for the hilariousness of Ben Kingsley's character and his interesting accent, which sort of combined New Zealand, Australia, and South
African. It was like a Sansar. Yeah. He was doing his Sansa Super 15 accent.
Yeah, but we're not reviewing it this week, so I'll hold those tweets.
Yep.
And that way, also, if you're not following us on Twitter, it'll lure you towards us.
That would have probably wrecked his career, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's all over.
He'll be typecast now.
Forever.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I got that face tattoo. It's all
face
over.
Tattoo,
yeah, that's it. It's all over for Sir Ben.
Right. So... let's start with a tweet from Fred Thompson, because we seem to have them at least two a week.
Like, I tell you what, whoever this mystery man is, he gets to the movies a lot and is doing a very sterling job of doing two-word reviews much better than me.
Amazing. Let's start with 20 Feet from Stardom. Hidden Stars, best documentary I've seen this year. The voices on display were mesmerizing. Two-word review for... oh, nope, say that for next week. Two-word review for The Delivery Man, sentimental dramedy.
Is this Fred again?
This is Fred again, yes.
God, it's epic.
I know. Still not a Vince Vaughn fan, but was good. He was good in this.
Yep. So. Well, I mean, Vince was only really good in Swingers, wasn't it? Was it? No, not what was it?
Swingers, but yeah, Swingers, that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, wasn't it?
But he is a very, very popular and reliable box office star when he's doing this sort of laid back
everyman
yeah, slightly sort of slacker, you know it's the perfect part for him. And we'll talk about this in a little while, but you can sort of see why when he would have watched Starbuck, he would have gone, you know what, I'm having a piece of that, because that is the perfect part for me. But we're going to be doing Delivery Man a little bit later on.
A very advanced review from Reese Pie over in the UK. Two-word review for Blue is the Warmest Color, directional self-indulgence. I haven't been taken in by all the hype.
Oh my God, only the Cannes winner for the year.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
No, it shouldn't be on a pedestal.
Right. No, totally. You're absolutely right. What am I thinking?
I don't know.
When's it open here?
It does. It opens next year.
Yeah, February?
Something like that.
Oh, is it another of the February ones?
It's dated sometime in February, I think, from memory. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's long, too.
It is long, yeah. So cinema owners around the country rejoice at not only having another big film to open in February, but it's twice as long as all the others.
You know, it just makes it so hard. You know, Wolf of Wall Street, they're saying, you know, like, Allow three hours. Not even we don't have the time, but just allow 3 hours. It might be more, it might be a little less. But
does that mean it's not finished yet? Is that another one that they're still finishing?
I don't know. I mean, I'm like, 3 hours, man. It's an opera. Should be charging opera prices.
An interval
so you can milk people at your candy bar. That's, again.
No. Let them refresh themselves, Ben. What's this milking business, eh? You need time to rehydrate.
True.
Yes.
True. I won't argue with you on that one.
And one from the Merca, two-word review for Day of the Doctor, Doctor Woohoo.
Nice.
Yeah, yep. Like that.
That's still playing, isn't it?
Played on the weekend, just gone. Yeah.
Look, I
thought it was like a one weekend hit.
I thought it was a 1D thing.
Yeah. Seriously, I've been completely taken by surprise by that. Yeah. And what else? What else could the world of television could be snuck out onto cinema screens?
I've just started watching Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I want a movie. I'm not even done the first season, and I'm just like, movie.
Game of Thrones, you could do it like that.
Well, the first episode. I mean, you can imagine that the very first episode of a new season.
Mm.
Yeah, you could definitely get a whole lot of hype around it that way.
Are you a Team Lannister? I'm Team Lannister, man. I love them.
What about a Mad Men movie?
Yeah.
I would go see that.
I would too, but it's, I don't know how cinematic
it is. Just 3 hours. Just 3 hours.
Of those clothes.
Don Draper and those clothes and just all of it.
The drinking
and
the smoking. And,
I find that so overwhelming, the amount of drinking and smoking.
It's amazing. But another reason for the success of that Doctor Who was that it was actually conceived and shot in 3D. But for most people, the only way they were going to be able to see it in 3D was at the movie theater.
Mm.
You saw it, didn't you, Kaylee?
Yes, I waited to see it at the movie theater.
Right. And so how effective was the 3D in it? Like, did it add an extra dimension?
At the beginning it did, because they had David Tennant and Matt Smith explaining that there's going to be 3D happening. So always in the beginning of those intro things, it's really punchy and you really notice it. But for the rest of the, it did work. The effect was mostly used for the artwork, a moment in time, and it was all built around a story. Okay. So that was really important because you needed the depth because it was a 3D painting of this moment captured in time. But the rest of it, I didn't really notice the 3D. But I think maybe it's just because I go to the movies a lot that my brain just sort of shuts off the 3D side of things. I don't really notice it that much.
You take it for granted now.
I just don't see it after a while, or I just sort of get used to it and I don't notice it anymore. So.
Were there people kind of in character at the screening? Was anyone, you know, getting dressed up?
I didn't see anyone dressed up, but I didn't go to the big Sunday one.
Right.
I was in Auckland that weekend and walked down Queen Street after one of those screenings had come out, and there was somebody who had a very long woolen scarf and a hat.
In Auckland? Well, that's pretty weird in itself, isn't it?
And,
I mean, that's not going to be usual. That's not usual at all.
Exactly. And there was a woman wearing a blue TARDIS dress.
Nice. Good work. Good work. You can get them. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was like, I know you're all excited there, Kaylee, but
I never thought of making one for
conceptually,
myself.
Conceptually, it's a really interesting idea. In execution, I have to say it left something to be desired.
Yeah, that's true. Hmm. I'm sort of the wrong shape to be a TARDIS, but...
But how's this now? I reckon, like, what have we got? Sapphire and Steel?
Mm-hmm.
Blake 7?
Oh, yeah, Blake 7.
Tomorrow's People?
Space 1999.
Space 19, yes.
Someone's got to bring that way.
There's a wealth of films now that be released in, or TV shows to be spun, released in 3D for a limited time only.
Yep.
So get on to it.
Yes, indeed.
That sounds great.
More free ideas.
Do you remember Hollywood. The Tomorrow People? Remember The Hand?
Yeah, and there is a new TV series of The Tomorrow People. They have rebooted The Tomorrow People. Oh. And Steve Gray would be the person to talk to about it because he and I were talking about it. He's seen it. Apparently it is awful. But anyway.
Yeah. What a shame.
Yeah, so it doesn't always pay to go back to your childhood. But then and there. So let's have a look at the box office for the weekend and see whether Doctor Who managed to... Because it was number 2 last week.
Mm-hmm.
How was that 4-day weekend?
Oh, A lot of movement this week. So in at number 5, down from 4, we have One Chance, still hanging in the top 5 after 3 weeks.
Well, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, opening at number 4, Enough Said. Sitting at number 3, Thor, The Dark World. Opening at 2, Delivery Man.
Vince Vaughn strikes again.
And in the number 1 position for the second week in a row.
How did anybody know?
I don't know.
It was like a mystery.
Trailers.
I know, no trailers, hardly any posters, and yet somehow, like a stealth movie star.
But you'd have to say, I mean, what did it do?
Box office for the 28th of the first, 123.
Yeah.
That's not huge,
just
is
over
it,
123
for a weekend, for a 4-day weekend.
For a 4-day weekend.
No. So
really close with Thor. It did really close box office with Thor for that week.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but Thor's the number one, week, what, 4 or 5 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And the number one is still
there's a lot of numbers there.
The Games.
Yeah, the Hunger Games. So how much did the Hunger Games do? How far ahead was it?
Box office this week.
That's not fair.
Yeah, if you double it and then put a 1 in front.
Whoa.
And a comma.
Right, okay. Yeah. That's seriously still coining it.
My microphone is.
And apparently, I was looking at the box office figures out of the States for the Hunger Games, and it's now made as much as the first Hunger Games film did domestically after only 7 days in release. So,
and for total box office for 2013, I believe it's up in third place now. Iron Man 3 is still in first.
Yeah, which just goes to show what a phenomenon Iron Man 3 was, because you know it was not a big summer movie in the States. It was the spring, but nothing's managed to take it out. Which is interesting.
I'm interested to see what happens with the next two Hunger Games, because they are really releasing them a year apart. They're not doing this staggered Harry Potter thing. It's just you're gonna have to wait a whole year. So
yeah, and of course, when I was looking at the box office figures for last year, the big surprise to me was how the first Hobbit movie did basically over $1 billion internationally. It was a huge amount of money, even though I think everybody closely involved with it sort of felt a little bit deflated, a little bit sort of flat. It didn't feel like the juggernaut that the first three were, and yet it made like serious amounts of money. Next week we'll find out whether, the weekend after actually will be the first weekend for Desolation of Smaug. Apparently, Peter Jackson called it Smaug. He pronounces it Smaug.
Yeah, Smaug.
Yeah, I think in the movie. And in the trailer, it's pronounced as Smaug, and I think that's just silly. I'm like, Smaug.
Smaug. I still think of it as Smug, actually. The Desolation of Smug.
That's good.
Yeah, like so, that. But we shall find out whether that roller coaster, that Middle-earth roller coaster, continues. So, time to actually get into some detail about Mr. Vincent Vaughn's new picture.
David Wozniak, in 1994, you donated to a fertility clinic anonymously. Apparently, there was a mix-up at the clinic.
What?
You are the biological father of 533 children.
What?
It is impossible to be the father of 533 children.
It is impossible to be the father of 4 children.
We're in trouble, David. Your kids are suing to find out who their biological father is.
What do we do now?
This envelope contains the profiles of your children. Do not open it.
Vincent Vaughn makes him sound very distinguished.
Well, he's old now.
Funny.
He's too distinguished.
All right. So here we go. Delivery Man. This is a film that is a remake of a film that's very dear to some of our hearts.
Yes, I really enjoyed Starbuck, directed and written by Ken Scott, and he is at the helm for this one as well, the English language reproduction, starring Vince Vaughn and Kobe Smulders, who, if any of you watch television, she is best known for her role as a Canadian on How I Met Your Mother. So I really like her.
Oh, is that where she's from? Okay.
Yes, she's from How I Met Your Mother. I really like her. I thought she was really underused in this, but I'll get into that in a minute.
Yep.
Almost a shot-for-shot remake. Thankfully, they don't have the same opening sequence, because I was really scared going into the movies that that's what I would have to see, and I just didn't want to know that much about Vince Vaughn. it's still... I went in with a lot of doubts, being really pessimistic, because I really liked Starbuck, and I thought it was funny, and the reason I enjoyed Starbuck so much is because it was one of those really silly French comedies that just sort of can get away with anything, because it's just silly and, like, ridiculous and silly, but it had a lot of heart to it, and, you know, it brought out a few tears, and it really just sort of got you right in the gut, especially, you know, it had all those maternal things going on, or paternal things going on, that just kill me every time.
So this, yeah, I completely agree with that. That's as a new godfather. My goddaughter is just over a month old and living in my flat, and so I've spent a lot of time with her. And yeah, it's extremely difficult not to get kind of clucky around new life like that. So yeah, so a film about, you know, fatherhood and parenthood and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it did sort of wheedle its way under my skin a little bit as well.
And it hit most of the same emotional marks, but I didn't enjoy it as much. I don't know if that's because I knew what was going to happen already, because Starbuck is relatively still fresh in my mind. Not as funny. I think it lost quite a bit in the translation, because there are some jokes that are funny in French and some that aren't. A lot of people saying that it's improved because Chris Pratt, who plays his lawyer friend, is quite funny, but I don't find Chris Pratt funny, so that didn't really help.
No, he's definitely a particular taste, Chris Pratt. Although I thought he was okay, but it was very much a one-note sort of performance all the way through. Did you feel like there was, now, because your memory of the original will be stronger than mine, did you feel that there was much Vince Vaughn sort of improv in there? Do you feel like, because that's one of his strengths, really, is that sort of riffing. And there's often in a Vince Vaughn film, as in so many of American comedies, there'll be a montage sequence, which is just obviously just snipping together whole snips of bits of improvisation, just to try and sort of pad things out. And, you know, he's known for that sort of stuff. Did you feel like he was sticking pretty close to the script?
Yeah, I felt like he didn't really get a chance to spread out and do any comedy that he was really comfortable with. It was quite close to the script. It was just sort of regurgitating what we had already seen. A little bit, almost a little bit less. I felt like it was missing some points that the original had.
Yeah. So the dealio here is that he, as a younger man, he made a great many sperm donations in exchange for money to the local fertility clinic, and for some reason they continue to use his donations for their clients, which means that there are an enormous number, like over 600.
533
children were sired, if you like, with his sperm, and about 120 of them actually want to know who their father is. What I didn't get really from this, and I recall not really understanding it in Starbuck either, is why it's so important for him to remain anonymous. Because you think, actually, this film could have been much shorter if he'd just gone, yep, it was me. And what would have happened to him? Like, it's not like he had a great career to lose.
No, he needed the money from the lawsuit. If they won and he got the money,
yeah, but that only happens really relatively late in the process, that he understands that he could possibly counter-sue. So, yeah, it just seems to me that I still don't really understand why he somehow needs to, apart from being outed as a fairly prodigious masturbator.
Masturbator.
What, I'm not quite, you know, would that really be the end of the world? I don't know. So this film and the original, I still had a little bit of trouble getting behind the main premise of it. But that's not to say that it doesn't have, like, you sort of need it, because the way the film ends, it does wrap up the themes pretty nicely. It's a nice story and a relatively strong script. I'm a bit with you in that it felt to me like a faded photocopy of the original, rather than something that was actually given even more life. You know, perhaps if somebody other than Ken Scott had made it, if he'd just said, you know what, take it, fly away, go. Instead of writing it in the new one himself, directing the new one himself.
And Kayla, you said something interesting in that it's almost shot for shot. You thought it was almost exactly the same.
Yeah, definitely, which, beat for beat and scene for scene.
Which is, you know, you should spin it, shouldn't you? You should give it a twist.
Yeah, exactly. And something I did quite like about it, it uses New York locations really well.
Except for when they go, where did they go to the basketball game? Because there's this Canadian flag hanging.
That's Madison Square Garden.
Is there always a Canadian flag at Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, probably. Don't they play basketball in Canada?
Yeah, there's one team.
Yeah, well, maybe they were playing, maybe they were the opposition that day.
They weren't. I don't know what was going on.
Ice hockey, maybe?
Well, the change, because ice hockey was the sport in, or was it basketball? What was the sport that they played in Starlight?
I couldn't remember.
Soccer. Well, I thought it was soccer. Yeah,
it was soccer.
It was like five.
Oh, yeah, the sport that they played. Yes, yeah. The sport that they played was
so they've changed
soccer them. Because it's like an Italian family,
right?
Yeah.
So changing him to Polish.
Yeah, but the son, one of the kids. I can't remember if he played basketball or not in the
original. No, it was ice
original.
Hockey.
He did play ice hockey.
Yeah,
that's
I thought it was.
What I thought.
Yeah. So there may be some subtle little differences, but I did quite like the New Yorkness of it. And but you know, these are very tenuous little things to grasp onto, really, when you're trying to decide whether you really want to see a film or not. And so, yeah, it's a tough one to wholeheartedly recommend. But not the worst film we've seen this year, no. I would imagine. So how would you describe this in two words?
My two-word review for Delivery Man is nothing new.
Yep, and my two words are faded photocopy.
Good, I'm glad you used that, because I was like, oh, dang, that's a good one. Shoot!
All right, time for the next one.
What about you? Do you have a boyfriend?
Yeah.
What's he like?
He's funny and comforting.
Want a kiss?
And sexy to me.
Yeah. My ex-husband and I have zero in common, and I was completely repulsed by him sexually.
Oh, God, no. Remember that new client of mine? Well, it turns out she is Albert's ex-wife.
Stop seeing her, please.
She's like a human trip advisor.
Albert is not a hotel.
If you could avoid staying at a bad one, wouldn't you?
Oh, my God.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, James Gandolfini in... now, you might be able to help me with pronunciation. How do you pronounce the name of the director of Enough Said?
Oh,
Nicole Holofcene. Look,
keep going.
Wikipedia.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, but anyway, enough said. This is the first film to be released that stars.
I'd say Holofcene.
Holofcene,
like off center.
Okay, we'll take that. We'll take that as being gospel then.
Let us know.
Yeah, feel free to correct us. Anybody out there who actually knows, don't guess. Because that's just wasting everybody's time. But if you do know, tell us. Anyway, so this is the first film starring Mr. Gandolfini that has been released since he passed. But I don't think it's the last one that we'll see of his, because there were a few in the can. But this is... hands up around the table. Anybody else who's seen it? Enough said?
No, but I was listening to the seniors coming out of the cinema talking about it today.
Right. Well, that's close enough.
I bet they love it.
Yeah. Well, the great Tony Soprano's in it.
That's right.
There's a lot
and
to
he's
love.
Nice.
There's a lot to love about this film. This is a really sweet, charming film in which Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's best known from Seinfeld still and is a really underused screen comic presence, I think. She plays a divorced woman who's a masseuse, and she travels around Los Angeles giving these massages. And one of her clients is played by Catherine Keener, and she sort of befriends her while at the same time starting a relationship with Catherine Keener's ex-husband, played by James Gandolfini. And she's obviously very fond of this guy, Albert, but she starts to realize that Catherine Keener's character is basically bitching and moaning about her ex-husband, and she starts to think, well, what if it's all true? You know, what if I get into a relationship with this guy, he turns out to be the slob, the fat slob that she says he is. And basically she allows this woman to kind of poison the well, you know, poison the relationship. And it's a really it's one of those nice films where, you know, good people, you want good people to get together, you know. You think, look, you two are made for each other, you get on really well, don't talk yourselves out of it, which is, I think, you know, something that happens a lot in relationships, is that when people are a little bit afraid of what they might be getting themselves into, they find a way to talk themselves out of it. Gandolfini is fantastic, just lovely, schlubby. he's not the mean Tony Soprano. He's a softy, and it's just a terrific understated.
Which is a nice way to see him, isn't it? Because usually he's either like a villain or a hard man of some type.
Well, the last time I saw him on screen was Killing Them Softly. where he was the assassin having a nervous breakdown in the hotel room, and he was the best thing in that by a long, long way. And you know, it just makes you sad that there are so many great performances that we could have had out of Gandolfini that we're not going to get now. So we really should cherish the ones that we have. I enjoyed this film a lot. I thought that its sense of Los Angeles-ness was, and California-ness was really good. There's some great characters. Toni Collette is in it, and she has an Australian accent. Like, she doesn't pretend to be something other than an Australian, and that's a really pleasant surprise. And that's, I think, symptomatic of the way that the film works, in that it's lets people be themselves. It's not trying to build add layers upon layers upon layers of characters. And I enjoyed it tremendously. And it was romantic, and got you thinking about, you know, really, Gandolfini's character is the only one in this entire film who isn't worried about what other people think about him, and yet he's the one that, you know, for a long period of the film actually gets hurt by all of this stuff that goes on. So, look, I can't recommend it highly enough. I think that both of you should check it out.
Will do.
Yeah.
Yep.
And my two-word review, enough said.
There you go.
Boom. All right. Time for some news.
Veteran Wellington film and television producer Dave Gibson has been named as the new chief executive of the New Zealand Film Commission. Woo. Are we cheering for that? Is that good?
Yeah, yeah. I think in general terms, we think that that's okay.
Okay. Cool. Gibson replaces Aussie Graham Mason, who we spoke to on this program a few weeks ago, which you can find a cinematic extra of if you just sort of scroll back.
Yep.
Mason has just taken over as chief executive of Screen Australia. Awesome. Gibson's own production company, the Gibson Group, has been sold to the senior management team, so there's no danger of conflict of interest, and he takes up the role in the new year.
So it's exciting developments for all concerned, particularly in Wellington, because the Gibson Group has been around for a very, very long time as television producers, and they've started making feature films.
They made that, what was it called?
Fresh Meat.
Fresh Meat, right.
Tam Morrison, the cannibal... Which has actually has sold really well internationally. It's so, you know, that,
well, then good
from
on
an
them.
Investment point yeah. of view, it's turned out to be quite a good one. So yeah. The Gibson Group is very, very good at finding products that people will actually pay for, which, you know, has always seemed to be one of the problems that people have making films here in New Zealand, is, you know, like, so who's going to watch it? Who's going to buy it? The Gibson Group have always known.
Yeah, but isn't that determined by the sort of film commission's brief? You know, like, what I mean, are they there to make a dollar, or are they there to promote a culture?
It's because they've got an obligation to run as a business, and they consider what their funding as investment. But at the same time, they have a cultural brief and to tell New Zealand stories and to develop New Zealand talent as well. But you know, we've had a number of examples this year of films that have been funded by the New Zealand Film Commission that have gone into cinemas and haven't found an audience. Now, they may find that audience over time through other media, but certainly New Zealand films on the big screen, it's been a challenging year, hasn't it?
I think, and also I think in a way you're on a hiding to nothing if you're always looking at a film in isolation, like theatrically, and saying it needs to make a profit theatrically. Because, you know, I mean, there are films that do that, but there are a lot that don't, and they make and they still recoup at other stages of the life cycle of the film.
That's right. Even the big Hollywood productions, I was reading that Hunger Games is now over 300 million internationally, and if you think about what proportion of that gross box office would actually be left behind at the cinemas, you know, from the exhibitor's point of view, and then there's tax, and then they've got all the marketing costs. So it's still, it's going to be a few weeks of big box office before they've even recouped their production costs on a film like that. So yeah, it does. You've got to milk every single aspect of a film's lifespan, and I think that's something that here in New Zealand we haven't really quite got our heads around necessarily, that films need to be worked and worked and worked and worked rather than just expecting you know, success or failure at the box office. There was some statistics came out of the UK earlier on this week. It said only 12% of British films released theatrically made money.
Yeah.
Yeah, 12% is not very many, but that doesn't mean that they don't then go on to actually make more later on. You know?
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I mean, through DVD, through TV, through streaming, through all those other areas where they then make their money.
Yeah, so it's a big challenge for Dave Gibson at the at the Film Commission. But I think that having somebody who knows everybody in the industry and knows the whole thing intimately and has in the past made plenty of suggestions for how things can be fixed. Time to for the rubber to hit the road there.
And what is it with our guys? Because they always end up going to Australia. I mean, I know he's Australian, but prior to that, the last
chief executive of the
snapped up by the Australians as well.
Exactly. Maybe it's if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
New York.
Speaking of New York. Beautifully done. New York was the center of attention for awards buzz monitors today and yesterday as the Gotham Independent Film Awards named Inside Llewelyn Davis by the Coen brothers as Best Film of 2013. Meanwhile, the New York Film Critics Circle gave their Best Picture nod to David O. Russell's American Hustle. And nice little rhyme.
Look, and I got so confused last night and this morning because
you put your... you pull your trousers up that way.
Yep. One leg at a time, yeah, I know.
That's right. But it's easy. No. Undies. You've got to remember those, though.
No, this was... I was reading tweets from the New York Film Critics Circle, and then there were other tweets that had the hashtag Gothams, and I just thought they were all the same. But no. Which is what... But haven't we had that award already? Haven't we had the Best Actress Award? It's just so confusing that they would do them basically all at the same time. Mm. But anyway, the Gotham Independent, different thing to the New York Film Critics Circle. And possibly, you could argue that neither of them is anything of a pointer to what might happen next February.
No.
Well, I reckon these films are going to have to be pretty impressive, just given what I saw yesterday.
Did you sign the embargo?
I don't know if there was one, was there?
I got my email invitation said there will be an embargo.
Oh, okay.
There's some upcoming films that are good.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Watch out, everyone.
Well, and because I have to say, the two central performances in the film that we saw yesterday, you'd have to be bloody good to be
better
than that.
That's right. That's what I mean. Like, yeah. The bar has been set as far as I'm concerned. Right.
Yeah, but we can't say anything else.
Not another word.
Yeah. No. Moving on, the death of Fast and Furious star Paul Walker in a car accident during the weekend has put the franchise in doubt, although insiders believe that Fast and Furious 7, which was 2 weeks into its shooting schedule and on Thanksgiving break, will be completed, although...
I know, it's my English.
Will be completed whether Walker's material will be featured is undecided. Sorry, there was some extra words in there.
But they'll have to... do you think they'll kill him off in the film?
Or whether he'll just... They'll say, where is such and such?
Oh, he's on an island. Yeah. He's got married and settled down.
Yeah, well, apparently from what I heard, a lot of the photos that were on set of what they'd shot so far were big action sequences. So maybe there's enough.
If he's featured in those action sequences, maybe they're just going to have to shoot them all again without him.
There has been a Fast and the Furious without him, hasn't there? Yep. There was the Tokyo Drift.
No, he was in that one. It was Vin Diesel that pulled out of Tokyo Drift. Vin Diesel was the one
that... Who was the guy that... No, he wasn't in... Was he in...
I think Paul Walker's been in all of them.
Are you sure?
I think he was the listeners will tell us.
It was very brief if he was, from memory, because it was that other guy that kind of looked a bit odd.
I know that Vin Diesel basically thought he was too good for it for a while and then had to...
Ka-ching.
Yeah. And then came back. In fact, there was a quote from an interview with Paul Walker recently where they were talking about Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift and they asked why Vin Diesel wasn't in it, and he said he wanted too much. He basically wanted half the studio. So, yeah, he was the one that definitely decided he'd rather be Riddick for a while. And how well did that go down?
Yeah, I just kept knocking out these Fast and Furiouses.
Mm.
Well, but they'll keep rocking along. We'll get to 10 easy.
Yep, I think so.
Mm.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of late news that was just been announced. The 15 films on the shortlist for the Academy Awards documentary before they get down to the five. Mm. There are a few here that were screened in the New Zealand Film Festival. The Act of Killing was one. Blackfish was in the in the International Film Festival.
I did get to see that one.
Cutie and the Boxer was. Which Way is the Frontline from Here? The film about Tim Hetherington. And Stories We Tell, which I thought was Stories We Tell was going to get a release here, a theatrical release, but it seems to have dropped off the schedule. Or is that another one for February?
I think there are plans afoot. Yeah. Right. I think the biggest issue for those titles is fitting them in. Like, you know, I mean, you look at now through to Christmas and March, really. I mean, where would you put it?
Yeah, well, this is true.
You know, it's proving quite difficult.
And
this next week. After The Hobbit. The 19th.
Played against The Hobbit. Go head to head. Why not?
Not everybody wants to see The Hobbit, right?
See The Hobbit.
Also on that shortlist, The Armstrong Lie.
Patriots, if they don't rush in there and see it.
Dirty Wars, God Loves Uganda, First Cousin Once Removed, Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer, Tim's Vermeer, The Square, which I've never heard of, and 20 Feet from Stardom, which we're about to talk about now.
The rock and roll people like Bruce and Elton John and Stevie wanted to know who that girl singer was. My life has been all about trying to make a success of the gift that I had.
She was like the really hot one of the Icats. She was very hot, beautiful girl.
My greatest pleasure is to stand back and let them do what they can do.
When you're back on singer, it is a springboard, but it can easily become quicksand if that's not what you want to do.
20 Feet from Stardom. This is, I think, one of the best documentaries that I've ever seen. Certainly the most purely entertaining, you know, in terms of...
Bill Cunningham?
Better.
It's up there.
What?
Better.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Because there was no music in Bill Cunningham. This has
it's
all of the
nice,
great...
nice, isn't it?
This has got all of the great stories, all of the uplift and the redemption and the great sort of narrative arc.
It
tells you... celebrity. It tells you stuff that you didn't know before, which is, you know, the number one priority for a documentary. And then it's got this music as well.
Yeah. So,
well, I want to see the box office. I want to compare the box office for those two films, remembering that
it's not
Bill
about
Cunningham...
the money.
But it's a way to compare, isn't it, how successful they are. And I want to know that, you know, given that Bill Cunningham played on, like, probably 5 screens nationwide.
And it played for, like, a year.
And it played for, like, a year, exactly. I want to see how this measures up.
Well, this will be interesting. I think it should open stronger, definitely, because the word of mouth from the festival will be really, really, really good. Whether it has the legs or not, who knows? Mm. Screen space is, as we've just talked about, is tough. So things maybe get let go earlier because there's, you know, more pressure. But this is it's a fantastic film and amazing, really, that nobody's told this story before. It's about backing singers and the women, and they are mostly women from the golden age of rock, who basically filled in all the gaps.
80s.
The 60s. Pop. The golden age of
now.
Pop was the 80s. No, this is so it starts with sort of rock and roll turning into pop music at the beginning of the 60s, and Phil Spector and the Wall of Sound. And
I didn't know the Phil Spector story.
It's pretty hideous. He was a really unpleasant person. Mm. The music is fantastic, and so if there ever was an example of great art being made by a really, really horrible person, it's Phil Spector. And before he shot that poor woman in his castle in Bel Air, there's a movie of that with Al Pacino.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Which just
the hair, man.
Bizarre.
Looks crazy.
Anyway, so but even before that, Phil Spector was doing awful things to people, and, you know, lying and cheating, and but still producing this fabulous music. But
that is the entertainment industry, though, you're talking about, Dan.
Yeah, I'd like to think that it's not all as bad as him. Really, that would be too depressing. And then we move into the late 60s and these wonderful singers being sort of employed by the Rolling Stones, by David Bowie. There's a great piece of Bowie singing Young Americans on American TV with these fantastic backing singers behind
and Ray
them.
Charles.
Ray Charles, the Raylettes.
Raylettes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, it's it's a fantastic story, and these characters are terrific. I'm just going to give you a list of some of their names.
Do they actually get, though, the right level of recognition? I mean, is there a sadness to it? I mean,
yes. Yes, there is, and a lot of them wanted to be center stage. They thought that this was going to be a stepping stone to a big career of their own, and often they get a shot at it, but somehow, you know, it doesn't work. And so you get to understand to what extent success in the music business is about luck and timing, and you know, there's so much talent on display in, on the part of these women, that you know that it can't just be talent alone that pushes you over the edge. And you know, there are some terrific stories. Mary Clayton, who was, I think it was her, who gets a phone call at 2 a.m. from the Rolling Stones that they need a girl's voice for Gimme Shelter, and she turns up. She's in her curlers and her dressing gown. She's like, drives straight to the studio and just belts out the most amazing vocal line on Gimme Shelter. And there's some great stories like that. The other thing that really struck me about this was how wise and astute those women are about the industry and about their place in it. It's like, you know, they got to see it all. They got to see how the magic gets made without necessarily getting so wrapped up in it. You know, there's a perspective about the music business and about the art that they've got from being 20 feet or 11 meters or however far it is away from the center stage. And they just see it differently, and you'll really appreciate, I reckon, that perspective that they bring. And also there's my final point before I throw it across the room. My final point is that a lot of the big names that are interviewed are so respectful of their talent. You know, Sting, is just delirious with respect for the singers that work with him. Springsteen is another, and look, there are pleasures to be had all the way through this film.
Mm. Yeah, it was wonderful. And, you know, they did. It is good to see both sides as well, as you're saying. You know, you have this big talent who loves their singers, and you have the backup singers talking about how they've done jobs that were so demoralizing they are not sure how they got back up on their feet again after working with, you know, big pop, current pop acts and touring and just, you know, and the whole Ike and Tina age.
Yeah, I know. And exactly, there's some fairly horrendous stories told throughout this, but
I don't think I can glow any more than you have, Dan. It's just amazing. And the only way you won't like this film is if you don't like music and you don't have feelings. It's just wonderful. And yeah, I really love that era of music. And it's just, it's just haunting. Like, their voices are just so incredible. And, you know, it's also very interesting because there are some very big personalities on display, and there are some huge talents who are very humble, and it's just really nice just to see a documentary about really nice people.
Yeah, exactly. And
with amazing voices.
And who have a lot of them, they've sort of come to terms, haven't they, with the way that their career works and the way that things of life's panned out for them, and they're happy. They're happy to be where they are, and you know, there's a contentment about it. So, no, terrific film. I'm not sure really what to add, except we will be featuring some music from 20 Feet from Stardom before the end of the show. Do you have two words for it?
My two words for 20 Feet from Stardom are beautiful harmony.
Love your work. My two words really are just A+, because, you know, I don't think I can improve on that. From a pure sort of entertainment standpoint, you will you will enjoy yourself, your feet will tap, and you will be entertained. Can't go further than that, really.
Yeah, and you could go by yourself, you could go with a date, you can go with a friend. It's perfect for any situation.
Go with your choir.
Go with your choir. Take a group of 20. Just go see it. Yeah. In the theatre.
Yeah, definitely. So, Sia, have we persuaded you?
You have. It's definitely, I mean, you know, at the moment there's so much to get through, isn't there? It's very hard, I reckon.
There's a lot to get through, but of the three that we've talked about today, you know, there's pluses and minuses on those first two. I really liked Enough Said, but, you know, it's it it's quite a minor key film. The Vincent Vaughn film from the beginning, Delivery Man, leaves quite a lot on the table, I reckon, in terms of the first film. But the only one of the three that we're talking about this week that you just give a complete thumbs up to would be 20 Feet from Stardom. I would love to hear from Cinematica listeners who take our recommendation and don't enjoy it, and I'd love to know why, because I can't imagine that such a person exists, frankly. That, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. Next week, Steve Coogan brings Alan Partridge to the big screen. Alan Partridge. Ender's Game is sci-fi for kids, and even if we're going to have to delay recording, which I suspect we will be featuring The Desolation of Smug on next week's show.
Smaug.
Smaug.
The Desolation of Smaug. The Hobbit Part 2.
So,
that sounds so nasty.
We were talking about this week before the show about we may end up recording on Thursday afternoon next week just so that we can get that first session in. Si, you're busy next Thursday.
Yeah, I'm out next Thursday.
So we're going to miss out on you. I hope your procedure goes well.
It always will. I'm sure it will.
Is some laser work done?
No, not laser work. I need to get some work done, Kelly. Okay. You know, like, get the eyes a bit tighter.
Don't we all?
You know?
We'll post photos.
What's an acid bath or something? What do they do? They stretch your face and stuff like that. Dip you in acid. Nothing like that.
It's about to become bathing suit season, so I can totally understand why you'd want to get this done now.
Well, as someone who's regularly kicks sand in people's faces, yeah. I need to get some work done.
All right. All of that, except for Si, and more in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in whichever software you choose when you're listening to podcasts. That way, the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. Leave us feedback at the iTunes store. Those ratings, the reviews, they're super useful to help more people discover the show. Tell your friends as well. Make sure that more and more people are joining the Cinematica party. You can contact us and give us your two-word reviews, etc., in a number of different ways.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter via @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd, where you will find our two-word reviews.
Yeah, maybe not so much at the moment. I'm a bit behind, so yeah.
Well, eventually, you'll find our two-word reviews on Letterboxd. We are there as Cinematica or on our website.
But we love Letterboxd. Even though I don't get to post as much as I would like, it's a really fantastic resource.
So good to us.
They are really good to us. And also, if you don't have a blog of your own or a Tumblr, but you sort of want to get a review out, you can do it on Letterboxd. You can sign up to Letterboxd and you can write your review. Some people are writing really lengthy, thoughtful pieces about films, and they're shared around the Letterboxd community. I think it's a fantastic wee thing.
Mm. And, as always, on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
Indeed. The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music at the beginning was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We recommend you do. We're going to leave you with some more music. This is, you can't have a music doco on the show like 20 Feet from Stardom and not feature some of the soundtrack from it. This is from the soundtrack album, Mary Clayton's own recording of the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter. Until next week, that's all from me.
And I...
And for me.